Joining me today is a lady who has so many strings to her bow, we don't even have enough time to mention them.
He was my first great love, other than Mark from Take That.
She is a journalist, an author, a documentary maker, and an all-round funny lady, Cherry Healy.
She has to do almost nothing, and you feel like the weight of the world lives in her soul.
Welcome to my podcast. I'm so happy to have you here because you have your own podcast.
I do. Letters to My Fanny, the podcast, available now in various places. You know where to find it. Just Google it.
Just Google it. Just listen to it. You can hear Cherry's dulcet tones nonstop talking to women about lots of women-y stuff.
You know how Adam Buxton in his podcast just does a ramble chat? Well, it is currently a ramble chat. I talk mainly about what that person is doing with their life and day, whether it is mothering, whether it is running a business or being in the creative arts. I talk to them about how they wangle their life, trying to get some nuggets of wisdom from them, to learn from them and how they organise their life. We talk about relationships, sex, taboo subjects, monogamy, you name it, we cover it.
What is it you love about having a podcast with so much TV experience?
Oh, the freedom, babes. The freedom is amazing to approach women I meet. I generally end up by talking to people I have had an encounter with.
We've encountered.
Do you know where we encountered? And it's related to the films I've chosen. We were spying on Tom Cruise in a bar.
We were.
That's how we met.
We met. We went to a bar and Tom Cruise was sat on a stool and we couldn't figure out if he'd be taller or shorter if he got off the stool.
God.
And we were like, he's over there, but we're in a place where you can't take photos.
We were really close to him, though. I could pretty much smell him, which is creepy.
We could see him and you are always kind of like, what are they talking about? I bet if they met us, they'd think we were cool.
He would love me.
But yeah, that does tie in gorgeously to the three films that I have asked you to pick. Cherry, this is a film podcast. Do you remember the first film you saw or the first time you went to the cinema?
Oh, that's such a good question. Definitely with my mum. My mum is an absolute filmaholic. She loves it. And we would go, I think it was Ghostbusters, actually. I feel like it might have been Ghostbusters.
In the cinema?
In the cinema.
Oh, that's so
good. And we would go afterwards to a little tea shop in Bury St. Edmunds, and we would have cucumber sandwiches with white bread and cucumber slices. And still to this day, that taste mix is everything with spending time with my mum.
Oh, the nostalgia, that's something I really love about Admit One, is much like with fragrance and food and music, there's so many memories wrapped up in films.
It takes you back like almost nothing.
So much. I mean, you start with Ghostbusters and you finish on cucumber sandwiches. Being a mum of two, do you watch a lot of films with the kids?
Endless, because it's the only time I get to Instagram. Hello.
Kids, sit down. Mummy has got a lot of hashtagging to
I know when a kid's film's really good because I haven't checked my phone 200 times. And I love cinemas that have Wi-Fi connection or that you can get 3G. I personally don't love kids' films. I find that they are childish, like as they're meant to
be. Totally fair.
And they lose me. It's, you know, Finding Nemo, that's cute. I'm bored. So I generally do struggle, but my daughter adores films in the way I do. And I'd much rather they watch a film on a Saturday with me rather than back-to-back SpongeBob. I mean, I love SpongeBob, don't get me wrong.
It's endless.
It's manic and it's inane, but there's something beautiful about the craft of a narrative in a film.
You have made so many documentaries for the BBC. Did you ever study acting? Because you have such a massive presence in general and on screen. Did you ever want to go into acting or study just general theatrical arts?
Yes, I did. I wanted to be a drama therapist when I was at school. And so I went to do drama for social change at university. It's called Drama for Education, but it's essentially using the dramatic arts to help bring about change in a community.
That is so interesting. I have never heard of that. I've heard of it in that more kind of art therapy way.
Yes.
And not drama.
So, for example, I used to go and work in schools with children at risk of exclusion or children who were struggling, and I'd help them to express themselves through a little play or through dance. I used to be a dance teacher as well. And that's how I earned my money through universities. Every time I learned something, I would then take it out into a workshop and work at Starbucks. There are other coffee shops available on the high street.
So
it's in my bones now. Whilst I was at drama school, there was also an acting course It was a Central School of Speech and Drama. So it was an acting course, very famous acting course. I think Judy Dench went there. And they would always ask for extras to be in plays. And we did plays within my course. And I tried a lot of acting. I did a lot of acting. And I was always putting my hand up to go and be a pig, second pig on the left in someone's play. Literally, I did do an entire play where I was a pig. I'm surprisingly good at being a pig. You'd never know. It was just one of my best ones.
I'm so sorry I skipped that in the intro.
I know. So you should put that
she
in.
She has also been a pig
in a play. I am very good at playing very messed up, dramatic, dark people, which is weird because I'm generally quite a chirpy, positive
You're sunny.
Person. I would say I'm a reasonably sunny person, but I have a dark side. Definitely. Quite a dark side, I would say. I say dark side, as in I do like a bit of edge. Mm-hmm. I like the layers of people. So
you're interested in people.
Very much so. So I was always good at playing those characters. But then I realised I was actually incredibly pants at acting. If I did 10 plays, I'd get it right 3 times. And I'd be like, I think this is good. But the other 7 times I'm on stage going, no one believes me. And I don't believe myself. Oh, God, make
I've
it
committed,
stop.
But no one actually thinks I am the pig.
And you've got to do the whole run of that play. And it's excruciating. And also, I find rehearsing deeply boring. And that's a lot of the job. So a huge part of the job is learning lines and rehearsing and riffing. And I realised that I didn't care about it. I wanted to do the play and that was fun, but I didn't want to do any of the work towards it. And I realised that acting was entirely not for me. What I really love is people's stories. That's what I realised. And whilst I was teaching and doing my drama therapy, it didn't give me enough access to just sitting and listening to how people do their lives. That's essentially the very big umbrella of what I love, is how do people do their lives in the different contexts that they live, whether it's in a war zone or they've just got 10 kids and no money or they're millionaires. How do they get breakfast and look after their kids and organise themselves and mentally process their life?
Do you have an all-time favourite actor / actress?
Jodie Foster.
Jodie Foster. Quick, so you knew immediately.
Oh, that woman.
She gets you to the cinema.
The level and intensity of her emotion, I just can't really fathom it. She has to do almost nothing and you feel like the weight of the world lives in her soul. She is the most remarkable actress, I think, ever.
And has been doing it since she was, what, 5?
Yeah, in such a kind of unshowy way. She's so unshowy and untap dancing and so disinterested in celebrity. I just feel like she's one of those human beings that has such depth of emotion and compassion and empathy, and she brings it all in such a subtle way on screen.
That segues perfectly into talking about your first film choice.
So my first film choice is the one I'm most passionate about, and that is Contact. When I saw this film, I really... You know, have you ever seen a film where it takes you a while to recover from it, and you go to the film with someone and they try and talk to you after, and you go, no, I can't talk right now. I don't want to break what's happening. And
that for me is the sign of a really great film. And I know the crap ones because I leave and I barely remember going to the cinema.
Yeah. Yeah. And you poodle out and you're like, oh, do you remember where we parked? I can't remember. Was it B42? I'm quite thirsty. I'll need a wee. Can we wait by the popcorn? Not with that one. With that one, I had no idea what I was going into. I just went in and came out. It's like, it was a mixture of a deep love of sci-fi, Jodie Foster bringing her entire emotional self and putting it in your face, and my heart exploding at the emotion of it, and also daddy issues, because there's this amazing scene, you know, she loses her dad at the beginning and he's the one who encourages her to go into science. And
my next question was, you know, a rough synopsis of the film. So
rough synopsis of the film is that Jodie Foster is Ellie and she is a scientist. This is play school synopsis of the film, but essentially she is obsessed with finding life outside of Earth. So she's always listening to the universe and she's on a program which is SETI. I can't remember what that stands for, but it's a government funded extraterrestrial science program, but that gets shut down by evil Mr. Government official. We hate him all the way through the film. And so then this amazing industrial billionaire decides to fund her So she's doing this incredible work, and essentially she hears a message, and it's lots of prime numbers. And it's one of the most brilliant, brilliant moments in any film, the drama of it. And essentially, it's a woman listening to radio waves and she hears some prime numbers. I mean, it shouldn't be as jaw-droppingly, earth-shatteringly as exciting as it is, but it's Jodie Foster. And you know that everything is about to change and her world is about to change, and you feel it all for her and with her. And she then goes, sets about deciphering what these prime numbers mean, and written on a page, no one can really understand it, but then there's a brilliant scientist and they decide to look at it in a three-dimensional way, and they see that it's instructions on how to design a kind of transportation system. So lots of shenanigans happen. The government gets involved and trying to shut them down. And then the billionaire funds... This is one of the brilliant moments. The whole world gets excited about this and gets together and funds the program to build this construction. And... you know, that we don't hear about the billionaire for a while. He kind of goes into the background. So it's this big worldwide mission to build this, what is, I suppose, four spherical rings moving extremely fast around each other. And Ellie gets put into a pod at the top and it gets dropped down into this mechanism. And the belief is that she will then be transported. And what happens is they go through this big panel to see who should be the person to be put into the pod, and obviously Ellie's like, hi, I discovered these these messages and I deciphered them. Hi, I'm like right here, and I'm also a woman, so that's obviously a problem because I have a vagina, I can't do the science properly.
I understand why you've chosen that as one of your three, Cherry, because it sounds like it covers so many bases. You are a woman who champions being a woman, smart women. Women can do every job and role that men can do. And that sounds like that is what that movie taps into.
I think that was my first experience of a woman kicking ass in an intellectual, powerful way whilst retaining her femininity. Bit like Sigourney Weaver in Aliens. I was really torn between that and this. I thought I'd just put that in there. I know it's cheating.
That's okay, though. It's along, you know, it's along a similar genre.
Yes.
Cherry, that takes us to your second film. What have you chosen?
My second film is Cocktail. And again, I'm very torn between this and Top Gun. Because when I was young, I only had eyes for Tom Cruise. He was my first great love, other than Mark from Take That. Tom really
Sorry, Mark, I still love you.
You know when you fancy someone when you're younger and you think you may die? You think you actually can't cope because you know you'll never have them and you'll never meet them. And you want
to die. Mel Gibson, Forever Young for me.
Really? Oh, that's a great one.
Oh, my God. That film changed my life. My sisters and I would just watch it and be like, we'll never have him.
Never.
And now we don't really want him.
And it hurts. It actually hurts.
Aches.
And Cocktail hurt me. And I watched it again and again for the pleasure of the pain. The pleasure of... And it was my first... heart awakening, and I loved him, and I loved this. The story is just.
I was going to say, so for
fun.
Those who haven't seen it, you've got to see this film. But if you if they haven't, how would you? What's the story? What's going on?
So sexy Tom Cruise wants to be a high flying, high paid businessman. So he goes to study at a business school in New York, and to pay his bills, he gets a job in a bar, and there he meets Coughlin, and who is an older, much very cynical, world-weary barman. And together, they learn lots of tricks. Coughlin decides to kind of be Tom Cruise's, whose name is Flanagan in the film, decides to be Flanagan's mentor and teach him the tricks of the trade and how to deal with women and money. And he always starts it by saying Coughlin's law. So he has lots of those throughout the film. Essentially, the crux of it is Flanagan, Tom Cruise, meets sexy, curly-haired blonde. And I can't remember what her name
Elizabeth
is.
Elizabeth Shue.
Elizabeth Shue. What's her name in the film?
Oh.
I can't remember. Sexy, curly-haired blonde who's cute and adorable. And they
Supergirl next door, isn't she?
Yes, girl next door. And they fall madly in love. And they have this unbelievably beautiful summer romance. Swimming in waterfalls, kissing, campfires on the beach. Pineapple cocktails.
The best.
Talking about flugelbinders and how he's going to make his money. Anyway, she sees him one night kissing an older rich woman at the bar. It's a bet from Naughty Coughlin. So
meddler.
Meddler. So she then flies back home to New York. She's very angry. Luckily, Tom Cruise is awesome and he obviously chases her. And he finds she's very rich and he has to punch her dad's face in a dramatic scene. And they decide to run off together, come what may, even though she's now been disinherited. And she
But he doesn't care because he doesn't want the money.
Because he loves her.
And he can make great margaritas.
And then she gets up the Duffers and you see them in their bar. And he stands on the bar and he sings her, he writes her a poem. And he says the poem on the bar. And she's there all happy and they have happiness ever after. And that's how I thought my life would go with Tom Cruise.
That is the thing with films, isn't it? Because you watch it to the very end and you kind of think, what happens when it stops rolling? You're like, I mean, are they still together, do you think?
Yes, of course. Antonia, what are you saying? They have many babies and they're happy. And Tom Cruise secretly loves me, but that's okay.
It was real. But weirdly, this film didn't actually do very well, but it has become a cult film, hasn't it? Because I think everyone in our generation grew up watching it and it was cool and sexy and money orientated and hot girls, but then love prevails.
Got a lot. It's got kind of cool New York and funky bars and sexy women and then waterfalls and beaches and laid back lifestyle and Tom Cruise. You see him semi-naked. I mean, it really does have everything.
Okay, this third one, I salute you because when this film came out, I cried laughing and I've seen it so many times myself. So Cherry Healy, what's your third?
My third choice is the film that I can mouth every single word to, and that is Zoolander.
Oh, brilliant.
I love this film so much. I feel like it's a part of me. I feel like it's really a third limb. It's a magical film. It really is. To be able to poke fun in such a loving way at an industry that takes itself so very, very seriously and have everyone join in because it's such a kind of loving joke. Everybody knows we can all be ridiculously, ridiculously good looking. We all know Blue Steel. The whole film is hysterical from beginning to end.
So what happens in Zoolander? How would you describe?
Oh my
not describe
God.
The film. What
so
is the film's story? Because it is the most crazy.
It's such, I'm going to try and do this really, I'm going to do it in broad brushstrokes. Okay, so you've got Derek Zoolander and he is the top male model. Everyone adores him. Oh my God, Derek Zoolander. Oh my God. And then another male model comes in to threaten his crown. Hansel, Hansel, oh my God, Hansel. Who's the kind of boho newbie. You know what?
Ride
I just like Sting. I haven't listened to his music, but I really like appreciate that he's done it. And I like bark and I really appreciate trees. And he rides a scooter. So he really threatens Derek Zoolander. And so Derek Zoolander's kind of pushed out of significance. While this is going on, there is a kind of weird plot by the fashion people to kill the president of Malaysia.
Mugatu.
Played by the genius Will Ferrell, being hysterical and saying things like, don't you know a foamy latte makes me bloated and farty? And the way he runs from one side of the room to the other. And for a long time, I only ran like that. It's kind of really like over-exaggerated movements.
This film sculpted you as a person, Cherry.
I've watched this film more than any other film, apart from maybe Wayne's World. Oh, I slipped another one in. Oh, I did it again. But Zoolander really, I just laughed at this film so much.
You can really, really love a film, like really, really, really love a film.
Ah, nice. Yeah, you
like
do.
Zoolander, does that gear you up to watch the sequel?
I watched the sequel. I didn't love it.
Yeah, like
I was
Anchorman.
Surprised. Oh, God. Anchorman, again, brilliant film. So many jokes just coming at you. But I didn't love Zoolander's sequel. And I very much went with a very open heart. I wanted to love it. I thought the first 10 minutes of Anchorman was as funny as the whole of Anchorman 1.
For me, I agree with you wholeheartedly. And I think the advert was, you know, when they make the trailer, the best bits of the film. And then you're like, oh my gosh, I could have actually just watched the trailer.
That's it.
And bought my own popcorn and stayed at home.
I didn't even think the trailer of Zoolander 2 was funny. I thought
new.
Penelope Cruz has never looked sexier. I mean, she was unbelievably smoking hot, but I didn't laugh once in that film.
And that is the point of Zoolander. It's a massive lol film.
They just hit something really special that couldn't be recreated. I didn't think, in Zoolander 2, I just didn't think the whole Justin Bieber chase scene was in any way funny.
Especially because the first film had such amazing cameos. Yes. The best being Bowie.
Oh, just amazing. Right? How did they get him to do that?
And apparently, Ben Stiller wrote him into the film just thinking that would be the coolest scene ever. And amazingly, he signed up.
That is a wonderful story, and it's a perfect example of you might as well ask.
You might as well ask.
You might as well have a wang.
Don't ask, don't get.
Have a wang. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Wang means give it a try, by the way. I don't know where I got that word. I'm going to blame my brother right now. But in my language, it's go, have a wang. G.
Have a wang.
W-A-N-G.
Taking that with me.
Take that with you. Have
that. I'm taking that with me.
Forever.
Why not just have a wang?
Have a wang.
So, Cherry, before you came in to admit one, you had your homework of three favourite films, which have been brilliant. And now we do have a final question, which is, who would play you in the movie of your life?
I would really like it to be Jodie Foster. Because I am...
In this room, it can be whoever you want it to be.
I would like it to be Jodie Foster because I am a very emotional person, hugely emotional. I definitely would say I'm fairly empathetic. So when I watch films, I almost never don't cry or feel traumatised or feel completely involved. I can't watch horror films because I forget that they're not real and I genuinely feel like I need therapy afterwards.
Cherry, I do not watch scary films.
No. I know how some people think they're really fun, but I feel like people are dying. People are properly being tortured and dying. I don't find that fun. I find that really traumatic. So I feel like Jodie Foster would be able to do a lot of the emoting that I feel I might do in my life.
She would. She'd do the emoting and also would. The straight-up humour.
Is she funny? I don't know if she's that lols. Maybe she is. Has she ever done a funny one?
You know, it's one of those ones that the words came out and I'm like, hold on, has she ever been
funny? I don't know how lols she
is. But you're so right that she would do the Cherry Healy gorgeous, emotional... smart thinking woman so well.
Definitely. Maybe the someone crying, maybe over emotional woman.
Maybe to play the story of your life, we'd then just sub in Will.
Will.
Sub in Will Ferrell.
Oh my God.
And then he'd do the lols because I mean you need someone to do the funny bits because there are so many with you.
I could not love that more. I can't tell you how much I wish I'd said Will Ferrell as my answer.
Perfect. Yes. Jodie Foster, yes. And Will Ferrell to play Cherry Healy, the story of her life.
I just love that so much.
Cherry, thank you so much for coming and talking to me on Admit One. We talked about vaginas very briefly, but your three films, that's such a cool combination and actually says so much about you. We've got some really funny with Zoolander. We've got Contact, Pioneering Smart Women. And then Cocktails. We met over a cocktail with Tom Cruise.
With Tom Cruise. Boom, done. Oh,
how
my God.
How serendipitous. Boom.
It's perfect.
So thank you so much for your time, Cherry.
Pleasure. I've loved every minute of it.
Next week on Admit One, we're talking about fashion and film with journalist and filmmaker Davina Katt.
I think every fashion blog and every site I've ever read or seen, at some point in time, they post something of Roller Girl in her yellow Lolita sunglasses behind the Polaroid camera. It's become such a definitive image in fashion.
Don't forget to subscribe to Admit One on iTunes for more movie memories from my stellar lineup of guests.
Admit One with Antonia O'Brien is an Audioboom production.